That's right. It's the Traveling Radio Show, offbeat travelogue since 1975. In this episode, we're off to Portland, Oregon, the Rose City, Stump Town, featuring the music of Portland's very own Three-Leg Torso. I'm your host, Jeff Jacoby, here with my co-host, Tom Hood, and our assistant, former Portland State University student, Rochelle Schmidt. Portland has a well-deserved reputation as a vibrant, young, politically correct sort of place, filled with earnest folks on bicycles trying to make the world a better place. That side of the Rose City is everywhere. You'll notice it right away when you take these very efficient and free trolleys all over downtown. But Portland has a, shall we say, more earthy side too. A world of tattoos, alternative lifestyles, and a heavy dose of edgy oddness. If you walk around this old Pacific Northwest logging town on the Willamette River, you'll feel the pulse of several different Portlands, and you're about to experience plenty of them, from Powell's Books to the Velveteria. So, let's go! They're mixing dough back here in the back of Voodoo Donut in a big old bucket. We've started our journey at an icon, Voodoo Donut. They've got all sorts of round pastry. And as they like to say, the magic is in the hole. Here's the fryers with a lot of oil. This is it, huh?
This is it. All right. Fry these for a minute aside.
Oh, it pops them out. You said that. They come out a little skinny. Do they expand?
Yeah.
Okay, this is a really big vat of fat. They are puffing up, definitely. And then they cool and they get eaten. I mean, that's it.
Yep.
Do you like donuts?
I used to.
Voodoo is owned by Cat Daddy and Trey. Here, let me introduce you to Trey Shannon.
I'm Trey Shannon, co-owner of Voodoo Donut.
And we are looking at a case full of...
We're looking at a revolving case of some Voodoo Donuts that we have available today. Yes.
Okay, and they are?
We have vegan donuts on the top shelf, and including on those, there's a dirt vegan donut. There's a gay bar, which is a cream-filled bar with Fruit Loops on top. Chico stick.
Chico stick?
You know, like the inside of a Butterfinger.
Oh, okay.
And then down here with our typical... normal donuts. There's the world-famous bacon maple bar, the BM. We suggest at least one or two of those a day. The dirt donut, the maple blazer blunt, which rises and falls with blazers, winds, or boneheaded things that they do.
Yeah.
The Portland cream, which is the official donut of Portland, Oregon, as proclaimed by the mayor. The Memphis Mafia, the apple fritter, the voodoo doll, which is filled with blood. Of course, the C&B.
That you can't say on the radio.
Can't say on the radio, but the testicles are filled with cream and the tip as well. Right.
Yeah. Moving
and
on.
Then it comes in a pink box.
Oh.
The double bubble. There's a bubblegum donut, Fruit Loops, the Cap'n Crunch, Raspberry Romeo powdered. That's the Old Dirty Bastard, which is chocolate, Oreos, and drizzled with peanut butter.
Old Dirty Bastard?
ODB, RIP, baby. Wu-Tang, what can you do? There's the evilest donut in the world. It's an unholy chocolate donut with anarchy symbol on it. At least a quarter of that sale goes to the Dark One himself.
Thank you.
It just goes on and on and on.
How many varieties?
I bet we've got 70 varieties. I mean, without really just counting. I mean, it's kind of like Mexican food. You just kind of have your base, and then you put zillions of types of combinations. And, you know, what really is the difference between an enchilada and a burrito when it comes right down to it, right?
These guys not only make donuts, they do weddings. And they're legal. Cat Daddy's doing one right now.
Great spirits above, please tell me. Will Derek and Felicia's love last for all eternity? Please tell me so. And the answer is yes. Step the broom and start your honeymoon.
Here's a question. What goes with donuts? Coffee, of course. And in Stumptown, where else but Stumptown coffee? We're heading over to where they test all the beans they feature in their cafes, and the facility feels a lot like entering a forbidden mad scientist's laboratory.
Let's go into Stumptown coffee.
Let's go to Stumptown.
I like Stumptown.
So you're making soup?
It's actually liquor.
It's actually liquor?
Yeah,
excuse me?
The juice of a coffee bean is called liquor, and what we're doing is liquoring. I'm the chief liquorer, and this is my liquoring assistant.
I'm Jeff.
Jim, chief liquorer here at Stumptown Coffee Roasters.
Let's talk about coffee.
Okay. This is how we taste or evaluate coffees. There are several levels of sniff that we go through. We just sniff the dry grounds that are in the bottom of the cup, and then we add water to the cup, and while it's steeping, we smell the crust that forms, and then after 4 minutes, we carefully break that crust with a specially made cupping spoon.
Wow.
And then there's a little effluvia on top of it that we carefully scrape off. It's like off gas and stuff that doesn't taste very good.
Yeah, what'd you call it?
Effluvia. Garbage.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But how does all this fit into what Stumptown does?
The main criteria for us to buy a coffee is its quality. So the only way to know if coffee is good is to put it through this process.
Do we taste or smell or rub it on our foreheads?
You guys can taste if you like. There's your spit cup.
Okay. Just like wine.
Just like wine.
This is a coffee from Ethiopia, and this is a direct trade coffee for us, which means that we work directly with the farmers and give them a premium for their coffee. Put a little bit in the bottom of your bowl. And you're going to slurp across the surface as if you're slurping hot soup. What you're doing is aerating it, turning it into a mist, so your whole apparatus can get a really good reading.
Go ahead, Tom.
What apparatus do I use?
You really want to spray it. You want to make it a mist.
A mist.
You know how to inhale, don't you?
Yeah, but I usually don't do that with coffee.
And then I chew it a little bit, too, so you can get it all over your... inside your mouth and your tongue and everything.
How many times a day do you inhale coffee like that?
Hundreds.
So you really are kind of wired, aren't you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm actually asleep right now.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We should go to the cafe and drink coffee. Okay, all coffeed up, we're off to the Kennedy School. Dating back to 1915, this former elementary school now contains a hotel, taverns, restaurants, and community rooms. There's definitely a fun-loving feel to the place. I mean, the detention room is now a cigar and whiskey bar. Don't you wish that was the case when you were in school? We're here to visit a community group that gets together just to sing old hymns. And they really sing them from the heart. Shall we go in? You call it, not sacred singing, you called it...
It's called Sacred Harp Singing. The book that we sing from is called The Sacred Harp. It was published in Georgia in 1844.
Wow.
And most people think that the term Sacred Harp refers to the vocal cords.
But it doesn't.
It may.
Oh, it might. Yeah, okay, okay.
There's just no proof of that.
But there was another term you called it.
It's also called shape note singing because the musical notation uses different shapes for the note heads. They're not all round. There are triangles and squares and diamonds and circles.
I knew it. So you're shapeshifters.
We try not to shift too much from what's on the page, but it is primarily an oral tradition, so we do shift a little bit. There are people from all walks of life that do this and from every possible religious background and no religious background as well. It's a religious experience without the religion. It's just singing for the sheer joy of singing. It just happens to be Calvinistic 18th century hymns.
You'll sing anything.
They sound real good. That's why we sing them.
After Calvinistic hymns, we need a glass of something, so we're heading across town to visit Hip Chicks Do Wine. Described as an urban winery and located in a district filled with warehouses, Lori and Renee make delicious blends with cool retro labels. Our co-host Tom makes Oregon wine, so he'll take the lead.
So I'll just ask you, how did you get so hip?
Oh, well, that's something you wake up one day and decide for yourself. We had been out wine tasting and one day just decided that making wine might be fun.
Where are you getting your grapes?
We work with about 10 vineyards all over Oregon and Washington.
So you call yourself an urban vineyard?
Well, an urban winery.
Urban winery.
I was looking
for the grapes.
No, we got two.
We have two outside.
One wild cab, and then we got some Pinot Noir.
And you make a very little bit of wine.
Teeny tiny bit.
You got to buy the glass.
Yeah, basically.
Custom crush.
Right.
That's great.
Now, what does crush actually mean?
It's a whole process of not sleeping and getting really sticky and kind of crabby and making a lot of the magic happen.
But we used to really do it by hand bucketing every single cluster into a very old, small crusher destemmer. And 2 years ago, we were able to upgrade to something a little bit more user-friendly, a little bit larger, does a little more of the automated work for us. We still do some hand bucketing.
I have this vision of you crushing the grapes with your bare feet. You know?
Yeah.
So what are your favorite varietals?
They're all my babies. I would say right now Cabernet Franc. Yeah, we do a single bottling of Cabernet Franc. We get the grapes from the Tri-Cities in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Hot climate.
Yeah, hot climate. And ours is really nice because it's very spicy, more spicy than a lot. And it's got that nice undertone of cocoa, that little bit of bell pepper. It's just a very interesting wine.
I appreciate that you are not over-oaking. You're letting the fruit speak.
Definitely. To me, that makes it more food-friendly. You know, when you take a wine that has a ton of oak to it, although people do enjoy drinking that, when you pair it with food, to me, then all you really taste is the oak. And I really want to see the marriage of both the wine and the food, because when you get those perfect food pairings that just work, whether they're by accident or on purpose, that's what makes it really fun. That's what's exciting. That's why you want to just keep making wine and eating good food. And
yeah.
How do you come up with some of the suggestive labels and posters that you have?
Well, sometimes the name comes first, and then we have to figure out what kind of wine to put in the bottle. With our pulp novel series, Renee came up with that idea several years ago, and she wanted labels that looked like the book jacket covers of the pulp novels of the 1940s and 50s.
Your labels are playful. You are obviously playful people, and yet when you talk about the wine, you get all serious on us.
That's because she's a big geek.
That explains everything. Thank you.
Well, we also like to say serious wine, serious fun, because we can have a really good time with it. And that's one of the reasons why we decided we wanted to make wine. We basically got tired of that whole segment that was so pretentious and serious about it all the time, when we figured it's a beverage. You're going to drink it, hopefully often, and hopefully hours.
Yeah, right. And you're going to have fun while you're doing it.
What's going on in these tanks over here?
Oh, in the big tank. The big tanks are open right now. We mostly blend in those. Uh-huh. In the smaller variable top tanks, we've got a little bit of our belly button wine, and we've got our rosé.
Let's see what's in here.
You're listening to the Traveling Radio Show.
After lots of wine, it seems like the perfect time to go to the Velveteria, featuring paintings on velvet. Since this show was produced, they've moved on, but are forever a part of Portland lore.
Well, tell me where I am and who you are and why I'm here. And
we're the Velveteria, epicenter of art in Portland, Oregon. We have a blacklight room, our Naked Lady area, and then revolving exhibits. Right now we have Chihuahua-rama. We have an outer space show with Dr. Timothy Leary.
It's quite a lot.
We have Jesus and Mary section, everything.
Well, the rap on velvet painting, of course, has been that it's not real art.
That's what they say.
You've heard that before.
But you can't tell us that.
People love it.
It's vibrant.
Yeah, it's vibrant. Wow. It's like everything I look on canvas looks flat to me after being in here around these for so long.
Do you guys have favorites?
We have a lot of favorites.
We have so many favorites.
It's
which kid are you going to take out and shoot, you know?
So what made you become proprietors of the Velveteria?
We saw how the world was going. We said, you know what? Somebody's got to do something to make this generation happy.
And we have here a French artist.
Pissarro.
I don't know if that's Pissarro or not.
I have a copy of
it. Oh, you do? Is it Pissarro?
Yeah.
Oh, well, very good.
We have over 2,000 velvet paintings in our collection and about 400 on display.
Hey, Tom, you were asking about this one.
Oh, Elvis?
Mm-hmm. We've just discovered that Tom is related to Elvis Presley.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Can I borrow some money?
Are there any other Velveterias in the world that you know?
No. When I was picking these up, I thought, is there any competition in this field? And then I go, is this even a field? <You know? laughs> Am I the only one doing it?
Don't touch that dial. In part two of the Traveling Radio Show Goes to Portland, we'll sample the Saturday market, meet the gender-bending performers at Darcell's, and see if we can find the mysterious Zoo Bombers.